I'd like to distinguish myself in conversation between the class twos as being addicting and the class threes, fours, and fives as being habituating. Somebody whose habit is taking, say, Valium over an extended period of time will get to the point where they really feel like they can't do without it. But if the truth were known, they can, because people don't have to have Valium. There's no withdrawal syndrome such as the ones with narcotics. There is a withdrawal syndrome, but it's not nearly as severe. Now, one of the most dangerous combinations you can have is some of the sleepers or benzodiazepine tranquilizers like we've been talking about, and alcohol. There was a case, probably read about it yourself here, as young as you are.
Okay.
Young lady was taking Valium, and I don't know just how much she had. They never did find out, I guess. But she was taking Valium, and then she went out and had a few drinks, wound up going into a coma for several, not just 2 or 3 months, but for several years. And I don't know whether she, I guess she finally died after some 12 to 15 years. But that's the kind of trouble you can get into with these tranquilizers and mixing them with alcohol. The cough syrups that have codeine in them are one of the most popular anti-cough preparations today. It's hydrocodone, which is chemically it's similar to codeine, but it's not the same product. I think of it as being somewhat stronger than codeine, but I guess it depends on the dose. But those cough preparations can be abused. I know of several people that have been caught drinking cough syrup and mixing it with beer or whiskey or something else, just blow their mind, I guess. Another one of the most in class three that's very habit forming is preparations with hydrocodone in them, 5 milligrams, 7.5 milligram, or 10 milligram, under the trade names Lortab, Lorset, Vicodin, and that sort of preparation. And that's one of the favorite street drugs now. People seem to be able to get a hold of those, the doctors prescribing them for them, and then they go out on the street and sell them. I don't have any idea now what the price on that sort of thing is, but it's probably $5 to $10 a tablet on the street. Now, last time I heard, Dilaudid tablets, 4 milligrams, were selling from $50 to $60 a tablet on the street. Now that's pretty bad. It's amazing the amount of street traffic there is in drugs. Mepricin Fortis is one of the most popular ones on the street around here. I don't know what it's selling for, but doctors use that for patients they honestly think is in pain, and then they can't get a refill, but they can get another doctor to prescribe more and more, and then they go out and sell it on the street. And it's actually one of the most important economic forces in the street. On the street today is the sale of drugs, and most of it's prescription drugs. Now, in the bigger cities, they have some of this new crystal meth, I guess, and crack cocaine is available just about everywhere. But one of the most popular things, evidently, especially in smaller towns, is prescription drugs, things that are controlled by the Drug Enforcement Administration but are misused by the public.
Okay, so when you're talking about class two, and you didn't mention class one, now these are, the class one are the things like the heroin.
Yeah, the things you cannot buy legally.
Okay, so they're just completely and totally illegal?
Yes, heroin, marijuana, crystal meth. They're what they call designer drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll take something like LSD has been a popular one in the past. They'll take off a radical here and add a compound what it actually is, you know, they want to find out it's not included in the controls.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having to rework and reoperate, revise the wording of the laws controlling drugs so that they can, it will include not only LSD or, I can't remember all the names of all those things, but anything that you would add to it or subtract from it or change it in any way but have the same effect. So they need to rewrite and have a broader coverage in order to, for all of these designer drugs, they call them, to be covered. In other words, they changed several years ago. They changed the law to read when you're driving while you're drunk.
Mm-hmm.
They changed it from driving while intoxicated to DUI, driving under the influence of a drug, is what they're talking about. And alcohol is considered a drug too, so DUIs can cover a wide spectrum. Yeah, if you're speeding along on speed,
uh-huh,
and they catch you and find, we'll say, methamphetamine on your person, then they actually, you can be charged with driving under the influence.
Mm-hmm. But they have to be able to have reason to believe you have that before they do the testing, right?
Yep.
And then, if the drugs, what you're saying basically is, if the drug ends up being one of these designer drugs that has nothing,
yeah,
in it that they can, then this person might get away,
yeah,
free and be able to go out and do more designer,
yeah,
drugs.
Yes, a lot of the states have changed their laws, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the designer drugs are covered, and it should be that way in Alabama before long.
Okay. Oh, that's good to hear. They're working on, as our society changes, the laws change to,
mm-hmm,
encompass everything, and you've seen that throughout your entire,
yeah,
lifetime.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was giving a talk to the University of Dubuque to a class of students of a lot of different ages who were interested in finding out what we were doing and testing for drugs and taking people to court with it and all. And now let's see, this is, we're talking 25, 26 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I told them, where you have now, it's illegal to drive while intoxicated. You're going to have to change the laws at that, to, if they legalize marijuana, you'd have to change the laws at that time to include driving under the influence of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, they've already done that to some extent.
You've been talking about several different drugs. One of the more recent ones, at least in my history, what I know, is what I have always heard termed methadone, and you pronounced it methadone. Is it methadone, or is it methadone?
Well, either way would be all right. It just depends on how you want to say the drug. It's kind of like potato and potato, I guess. The methadone, whatever, it's been around for a long, long time. Eli Lilly used to make it. I can't remember the brand name right now, but they made it, you know, back in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
We had it then, and it's always been either Class A or Class 2. I was trying to remember the name of the Lilly product. But anyhow, I believe they're the only ones that made it early on, but now it's made by several different manufacturers. And it's mostly available through clinics that have been certified as methadone clinics or programs authorized by the Drug Enforcement Administration.
Mm-hmm. Is methadone a derivative of opium? Is it an opiate?
No, methadone is a synthesized product. It's kind of like Demerol in that it's made made up chemically rather than being made up from a base like opium. The opium derivatives are things like codeine and dilaudid and morphine. And the hydrocodone, although it's chemically synthesized, is very, very closely related to opium as far as its structure is concerned. The another product that sells real well on the streets, commonly called Percs, is Percodan or Percocet, and it contains a product called oxycodone, and it's stronger than anything like codeine or hydrocodone. It's very powerful pain reliever, and it's also very popular on the streets. Either Percodan or Percocet is the one.
In the larger cities, they still have a lot of the hardcore drugs, at least what I consider hardcore, like heroin and the crack cocaine, which is basically a fairly new drug. But here, say in Silicaga, in a smaller town, people are going toward selling the prescription drugs.
That seems to be the way it gets going. Tracy, I haven't been out on the street trying to buy any drugs, but I imagine if you searched hard enough in this county, you could probably find crack cocaine. Now, whether you could come up with heroin or angel dust or anything is just, you know, much your guess is mine. I really don't know. But I do know that Birmingham has a big problem with it. And the police up there have done some rather extensive work on cutting down on the drug people that are operating. But I don't think they'll ever be able to cut it out completely. I'll tell you a subject that I'd like to see talked about by people who know, and that's the legalization of things like marijuana and heroin, all of those basic narcotics. If they could legalize it, it would just bring the price down. It might cause more addictions, but it also, at the same time, it would cut down on the profits by the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
If it cut down on their profits or cut their profits out completely, there would be no illegal importation of drugs. It's kind of like the problem with cigarettes, I guess. Cigarettes have been legal ever since I was a kid, and I know. Before that, most everybody rolled their own, but cigarettes and pipe tobacco and cigars, the whole history of tobacco is very romantic. It goes back to the earliest days in this country, because tobacco was an American product. And we know it's been established that tobacco and whatever is in tobacco besides the tobacco itself causes cancer, heart problems, and a lot of things like that. But I have an idea that if they cut out cigarettes, if they made a law against selling tobacco, it'd be just like the days in the 1920s when they cut out selling alcoholic beverages. It'd be such an illegal trade in cigarettes that you just wouldn't believe it. So I'm not so sure that they ought to try to outlaw them. And they certainly have enough legislation, I mean, legal action going on now against the tobacco companies. You heard about Philip Morris? Philip Morris is there on the